Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 23. A Brahmana is wise, blessed. Text 6. E bhumi eva shrinudra.
E bhumi eva shrinudra.
Krishna syadesha karina.
Krishna syadesha karina.
Praptan janita badrambo.
Praptan janita badrambo.
Gopano ramachoditan.
Gopano ramachoditan.
E bhumi eva.
E bhumi eva.
O earthly God.
O earthly God.
Shrinudra. Please hear us. Krishnasya Adesha. Of the order of Krishna. Karina. The executors. Aptan. Arrive. Janita. Please recognize. Bhadram. All good. Va. Unto you. Gopan. Cowherd boys. Na. Ramachoditan, sent by Lord Rama. Translation. The cowherd boys say, O earthly gods, please hear us. We cowherd boys are executing the orders of Krishna. And we have been sent here by Balaram. We wish all good for you. Please acknowledge our arrival. Purport. The term Bhumi Deva, gods on earth, refers here to the Brahmanas, who are supposed to closely represent the will of the Supreme Lord. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is not a primitive polytheistic doctrine holding that human beings on the earth are gods. Rather, it is a science that traces the descent of authority from the Absolute Truth Himself, Sri Krishna. The authority and power of God naturally extend along with the extension of His creation. And on earth, the Lord's will and authority are represented by purified, enlightened men called Brahmanas. This account will illustrate that the ritualistic Brahmanas approached the cowherd boys who were not at all properly enlightened, and thus could not appreciate the position of Krishna and Balaram and that of their intimate associates. In fact, this pastime exposes the pretentious position of so-called Brahmanas who are not faithful devotees of the Supreme Lord. Translation again. The cowherd boys said, O earthly gods, please hear us. We cowherd boys are executing the orders of Krishna, and we have been sent here by Balaram. We wish all good fortune. We wish all good for you. Please acknowledge our arrival. Om again at Timidandasya, Gyananjana, Shalaka, Chakshun Militanyena, Tazmai, Sri Gudavayanama. Jai Sri Krishna, Jai Hindranya, Prabhunatananda, Sri Advaita Gadara, Sivastri Govanda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The cowherd boys are speaking. What a rare, unfathomable privilege we have to hear the cowherd boys speaking. They are Krishna's personal associates, especially these cowherd boys, because they are in Sakiras, pure love of Krishna and friendship. And they are in Vrindavan. Krishna's friendly associates can be in Vrindavan as well as in Mathura, Dwarka, and in terms of his earthly pastimes, they can be in Hastinapur. All the Pandavas, they are friends with Krishna. They have a friendly relationship with Krishna, especially Arjuna amongst the Panch Pandavas. Five Pandavas, Arjuna is the most intimate. When the Pandavas would meet Krishna, Yudhisthira would smell Krishna's head, because Yudhisthira was older, and so therefore his friendship relationship had a bit of parental superiority to it. And Arjuna and Bhima would embrace Krishna because their friendship was on an equal level. And Nakula and Sahadeva, they would bow down because their friendship was on a subordinate level. Still, they're all in friendship. The Shastra says even Draupadi is also in friendship. So, in or shall we say, outside of Vrindavan, friendship can be mixed with awe and reverence, especially in regard to Krishna's opulence. But inside Vrindavan, the friendship is kevala, pure, no trace of awe and reverence, just perfect equality. So much so that even the cowherd boys will see Krishna's opulence sometimes as he kills a demon, but it won't in the slightest deviate them from their pure affection with Krishna in terms of Krishna, we are all friends, we are all equal. It is quite amazing how the Mayavadis want to be equal with God, and they do it in such an offensive way. In Vrindavan, you see freely how the cowherd boys are freely acting in equality with Krishna. Sometimes they serve Krishna in friendship, and sometimes they actually engage Krishna in their service. This is the mood amongst the cowherd boys in Vrindavan. Let's have fun with Krishna. Krishna is the best state. They romp in the forest. They swim in the Jamuna River. They take care of the cows and calves. All in friendship. And they actually think they're equal with Krishna. Therefore, as we have often explained, even when Krishna does something extraordinary. You see, in Vrindavan, Krishna generally, he acts with each of his senses in a normal way. He sees with his eyes. He hears with his ears. He tastes with his tongue. So he doesn't, he can do anything with any of his senses, but just to keep the sweetness of the Vrindavan spontaneous flavor, devoid of awe and reverence and opulence, he actually senses, quote-unquote, normally. So, these cowherd boys, they come in four groups. Those who are well-wisher friends, those who are friends, those who are confidential friends, and those who are intimate friends. So, as the list progresses, the intimacy progresses also. The well-wisher friends, they're a bit older, and they have a feeling of protection for Krishna. Rupa Goswami describes how after Arishtashura had been killed, some of the older cowherd boys, they thought that they spotted the return of Arishtasura. They looked on top of Govardhan Hill, and they saw this mass. And so they mobilized into action, the older cowherd boys. One was wielding a sword. Balaram went for his plow. Another cowherd boy was very agitated. Arishtasura, Arishtasura. They were ready to protect Krishna. And another of the older cowherd boys said, wait a minute, wait a minute. It's not Arishtasura hovering on top of Govardhan Hill. It's just a big cloud. So they calm down. So this is life in Vrindavan. Another time, during Govardhan Leela, Krishna, as you know, is holding Govardhan Hill with his left hand. And some of the older cowherd boys, those who were in the mood of well-wisher friends, they were talking amongst themselves. We have to do something. Krishna has been holding that hill night and day. He should transfer the hill to another cowherd boy so we can take a break. Because after all, we're all equal with Krishna. If he can hold the hill, so can we. It's the way it is around here. And then, while they were discussing, he said, okay, maybe it won't work that he transfers the hill to another cowherd boy. But at least he should transfer the hill to the right hand so that we can massage the left hand. So in this way, they were considering Krishna's welfare, even though they're friends. The relationship of friendship with Krishna is actually going to be very mysterious. So mysterious that Srila Prabhupada explains it is close to conjugal love. That's a mysterious understanding. And he doesn't go into that statement much, but just letting us know, don't slight the cowherd boys in Vrindavan, thinking, oh, they're not so elevated like the gopis of Vrindavan, because it is true that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Ramya Kashchit Upasana Rajabadu Argena Nipalpita. There's no greater devotees of Krishna than the cowherd damsels of Raj, because they set such a super excellent standard of sacrificing everything for Krishna. Still, don't discount the cowherd boys and their feelings of friendship with Krishna on an equal level. What are the impetuses for love in Sakya Rati, attraction for Krishna and friendship? Well, the main impetus is Krishna himself. He's the best friend. Wouldn't everyone like to have a best friend who you could rely on and who was all attractive? Krishna is the best friend. In his Braj Leela, he shows, I'm the best mate. I know how to hang out. I know how to have fun. Even when Krishna goes to Mathura with the cowherd boys, he shows, you know, how to be a transcendental hooligan, disrupting the city with his mates, you know, just making fun of Kamsa's laws and doing whatever they like, you know. Yeah. Krishna and his boys, when they entered Mathura, that's what they were doing. They were being juvenile delinquents. It's causing a disruption. So Krishna, in all ways, is showing he's the best friend. Sridham Sarvabhutana. Therefore, the main impetus for love of Krishna and friendship is Krishna himself. And the cowherd boys can't tolerate even a split second of separation from Krishna. Have you ever had the kind of friend that when you're walking in the forest and the friend, because there's trees in the forest, so the friend goes behind a tree as he's walking, and for that split second, you don't see your friend, and you panic. Where's my friend? That is Sakya Rati. That is love of Krishna and friendship. The cowherd boys can't even tolerate that much separation from Krishna. And, of course, you know about their wrestling and their sporting. They're stealing each other's lunches. All these perfect friendship activities they're doing. That's why Shukadeva Goswami comments in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. Sam satam brahma sakhanu bhujya dasyam gatanam pada daivatena mayasratanam another dada kesu sakam vajahu krita punya punja. Let's look and see how Krishna is perceived. Some persons consider this cowherd boy sporting with his friends to be the impersonal Brahman. Others, the devotees, consider him to be the Lord and they are his servants. Ordinary people who are ignorant think he's an ordinary person. But these cowherd boys, we can understand their fortune. How many bursts of pious activities did it take for them to get their positions of sporting with Krishna on an equal level? Krita punya punjaha. How many pious activities? Of course, you cannot attain Krishna's association in Vrindavan through pious activities, but Shukadeva Goswami is needing some way of expressing the incalculable good fortune. So, you know, you need to express it. Some kind of currency, just like you would look at some huge building and you would say, how many billions of dollars went to that? And actually the building might, you know, be incalculable, you know, in price. But you have to just use some point of reference. How many $10 did that cost? But similarly, you cannot attain Krishna through pious activities, but just to express that point, Shrimati Goswami is saying, Krishna Punya Punja, how many pious activities does it take? That's the currency in a sane human society. The currency is punya. Because you want to go after your death to the higher planets. So a sane person is concerned about pious activities. And of course, we know that bhakti is beyond impious and pious activities. So here, the cowherd boys, oh, we were describing impetuses before we get to the cowherd boys in this Leela with the Yajna Putnis, the wives of the Brahmanas. We'll talk about impetuses in love of Krishna and friendship. The main impetus is Krishna himself. We were describing that. And secondly, for those in love of Krishna and friendship, they're impelled by Krishna's qualities, by his activities, by his looks that impels them in friendship. And then there's a third impetus for love of Krishna and friendship, and that is the cowherd boys themselves, because they're practically equal with Krishna in appearance, and of course, in the mood of friendship, they're equal with Krishna. So by the devotees thinking about the cowherd boys, that impels such a devotee in friendship love with Krishna. That impels the love. As you mature in your reading of Nectar of Devotion, you'll start to really relish all these aspects. You'll start to zero in on what impels love of Krishna. Just like in the mundane world, people focus on what impels the lust. It's a big thing. They have all these Kali Yuga adult stores. The whole point of the stores is to sell you things that will impel lust. Impel your further implication in the cycle of repeated birth and death. But those perversions they originate in pure love of Krishna. In that pure love of Krishna has things that impel it. This is why it's important to read Nectar Devotion, so we understand we're not engaging in some kind of mechanical activity or ritualistic religious activity. The services that we are doing will result in love of Krishna. So we become interested. What is love of Krishna? Therefore, the cowherd boys themselves are impetuses for love of Krishna and friendship. Now, before we can get to love, we have to have Krishna's trust. Even in the mundane world, before there is solidified love. We're not talking about just romantic buzzes. But before there's solid love, there must be trust. So therefore, our sadhana activity is to earn Krishna's trust. Because why should Krishna want disruptive persons in his pastime? So he allows you to purify yourself, so that you can be a proper participant in his pastime. That's why after you finish your devotional service in this lifetime, if you're going to go back to Godhead, first you go to the particular universe where Krishna is having his pastime. You get trained up in association with Krishna in his appearance in this world. Go to a particular universe where Krishna is appearing at that time, and then you're trained up, and then after that you go to the local Vrindavan. Krishna has an ingenious on-the-job training program, and you have begun it. You have begun your training. If you understand what the purpose of this world is, you won't become bewildered. But if you think this world is here for my pleasure, this world is here for my fame, this world is here for my respect, what's the world doing for me? And you make the mistake of implanting that mood into devotional service, into your dealings with devotees, and there's going to be disturbances. What are the devotees doing for me? They're not respecting me enough around here. When will they notice how great I am? I often point out, sometimes you hear devotees who, a little upset, bewildered. They say, Well, if I went out into the material world, I would get so much appreciation. Yeah, people would respect my abilities. But around here, you know, the Vaishnavas, they don't know my glories. So what's the point of association of devotees? The point of association of devotees is to do humble service to Krishna. We want to attract Krishna's attention by our humble and dedicated service attitude. Now, sometimes there's the notion that humility means inaction. If you're going to be a humble devotee, you just walk around the temple all day, you know, your hands folded in pranams, and keep your eyes down, and yes, Jai Prabhu, Jai Prabhu. That's your only service. That's your only occupation. No, bhakti is about humility in action. Arjuna was humble, even though he's fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's humble. His humility is that he's simply executing the order of Krishna. Whereas in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, who is the most intimate friend of Krishna in the Pandavas, he was bringing up artificial humility as a reason not to fight. Oh, let them have the kingdom. They're so attached. If they're that greedy, let them have it. Let the Kauravas have it. I don't want to engage in this fighting. It'll just cause suffering. Why should we be greedy like they are? Krishna pointed out, this is artificial humility. I want something done. And then Krishna explained, the fact is, whether you do this or not, still I'm going to get what I want. But you, if you participate in my plan, you'll get the credit, you'll get the, you'll get reality. You'll be perfectly interacting with me in my plan. But even if you don't, my plan goes on. Similarly, Krishna doesn't need us, but we need to do something to please Krishna so we can regain reality. We are suffering from unreality. I was explaining to someone the other day how, like in this world, sex desire is taken to be a pleasure. Actually, it is a misery. Lord Brahma explains this in the third canto. He expresses his compassion in his prayers to the Lord for creative energy, for prowess in order to create. He prays to the Lord, I feel such pity for these conditioned souls. They're always harassed by scorching summer, by piercing cold of the winter. So many things are always pushing on them, including ceaseless sex desire and indefatigable anger. I'm simply thinking of compassion for them. Here is Lord Brahma, the original person of the universe, Adi Kami, the original scientist and intellectual. He's pointing out, this sex desire is a misery. But the fools of Kali Yuga, it's a benediction. Oh, feeling sex desire, The night time is the right time. Just think, it's a reverse thinking. It's a misery to be afflicted like that. So much suffering is produced. And of course you go deeper into the bodily conception of life. And it's also astonishing, I was explaining, how Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Karma Bhuta Bhuteshu Kamosmi Bharatarshava. I am sex life according to Dharma. This is how amazing bhakti is. Every sense can be perfectly utilized in Krishna's service the right way. And Krishna has a perfect program for every one of our senses. But other than the Dharma that Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita, the sex desire is a miserable thing. You're minding your own business, trying to live a peaceful life, and you're hit with cupid's arrow, and the whole world starts to turn upside down, and you see everything differently, you see others differently. It's a misery. How peaceful life would be without it. And certainly, far less economic problems. Why some economists point out that the real impetus behind economic development is family life. But now that's changing. That's Kali Yuga degrades. If no one's, well, not so many people are interested in simply family life. They're just interested in animalistic sense gratification. And that's become the real emphasis for economic development in this century. Just get things for yourself. So, what we consider to be pleasure, when seen through the eyes of knowledge, is misery. How are we going to understand that? We need knowledge. And the purpose of brahmanas is to give knowledge so you can understand this world as it is. So that with that knowledge, you can properly participate in Krishna's pastimes. Arjuna, when he was fighting, was being humble because he's executing the order of Krishna. Krishna told him, Nimitamatam Bhava Savyasatva. You can only be an instrument in the fight. If your defeat's not your concern. So when Arjuna's fighting, he's being super humble. And now the cowherd boys, they're saying to the brahmanas, hey, Bhumi Deva Sri Nuta, oh earthly gods, please hear us. They're respecting the position of the brahmanas, even though these particular brahmanas, they're deluded in that they are attached to performing rituals to go to the heavenly planets. That means they really don't know what they're talking about. They're just sophisticated materialists. But still, the cowherd boys are showing humility. They are brahmanas. They're not fully developed Vaishnava brahmanas, but still they're brahmanas. They're doing austerities. They're studying Vedic knowledge, so on and so forth. They're doing the rituals. They don't know what the point of it all is. Krishna says, I'm the goal of the Vedas. In fact, I'm the compiler of the Vedas. By me, through the Vedas, I'm to be known. All the Vedas are meant for understanding me. So they call them Bhumi Deva, O earthly gods. Remember, they have fallen flat on the ground to offer their undivas. But as I pointed out 2 days ago, even though they're falling flat on the ground in full dandavas, the acharyas point out that they had an effulgence that far surpassed the brahmanas, the ritualistic brahmanas. So, hey, Bhumi Deva, Sri Nuta, O earthly gods, please hear us. Krishnasya Desha Karinaha. We are here on the orders of Krishna. We are the executors of Krishna's order. That is humility. We're not here for our own purposes. Remember, we discussed 2 days ago how the cowherd boys had announced to Krishna, Rama Rama, Mahabaho, Krishna Dushta Nibarhana, O mighty arm Ram, O Krishna, destroy the miscreants. We have a miscreant attacking our stomach right now. We're hungry. So, we discussed how they actually weren't being selfish at all. They were thinking that Krishna's probably hungry. Therefore, if we say we're hungry, then Krishna will eat. And also, as cowherd boys, they're acting on an equal level with Krishna, and they just want Krishna to enjoy. And you know, Krishna's enjoyment means mateship, having lunch together. They're completely selfless. And you can see that in this statement, Krishnasya Deshakarina. We are here to execute the order of Krishna. This is what a devotee wants. We want a chance to execute Krishna's order. And that order comes through parampara. Krishna is not directly achieved, as you've heard so many times. He's achieved when you please his devotee. So the devotee is always anxious for an order to come through parampara, for service to come through parampara, so that the devotee can have a chance to please Krishna. Krishna is the property of his devotee. And Krishna himself is the inaugurator of the parampara system, the chain of masters and disciples. So Krishna has said in the Gita, evam parampara praptam, imam rajasya vidu. I'm understood through the parampara. And This has been demonstrated since time immemorial. We long to get borders through the parampara. We consider ourselves so fortunate. So Prabhupada has created so much service for us, so much service opportunity to come down to us through disciplic succession. Those service opportunities are a chance for us to become purified, to learn how to serve Krishna selflessly. So if we just plug in to those orders, if we humbly try to be an executor of those orders of Krishna as they're coming through the disciplic succession, our life starts to get properly focused and balanced. You can't focus your life, you can't balance your life without being an executor of the order of Krishna as it comes through devotional service. And that devotional service means parampara. You can't balance yourself. You can't focus yourself. You can try this way and that way. I'm going to get myself together. I'm going to concentrate more on this. I'm going to do that. But without being the executor of the order of Krishna through the disciplic succession, your service, devotional service, won't bear as much fruit. It's like my saying, well, I've got a great idea. I want to please Ryan here, so I'll find out where he lives, and I'll paint the pavement in front of his house purple. That'll do it. While he's at work, I'll do that. His wife is minding the child. They won't notice what's going on. And he'll be so happy. Naturally, Ryan, when he sees the purple pavement, he would say, well, I appreciate that you want to do something for me, and I accept your intention, but actually, if you're really wanting to please me, you know, just ask me. I probably have a list of things you could do for me. And that would be better. I remember when I was a new devotee, and I was starting to come to the temple on Sunday. And I just got this idea in my head that it would be great to have buttons that said Hare Krishna. I don't know how I got this idea. So I went through great endeavor to find a place in New York City that made buttons, you know, and I saw whenever I went to the temple, I saw the standard Hare Krishna colors, which were pink and turquoise. You know, happy every temple had to be painted pink and turquoise. You know, those are the bliss colors. Well, I can't imagine where that conception would come from, but anyway. Every room was painted pink and, you know, turquoise. Either the walls were pink and the trim was turquoise, or vice versa. The walls were turquoise and the trim was pink. Maybe it's because the spiritual sky incense packages then had those colors. So devotees thought those must be the colors of the spiritual world. But even sometimes you see outside, you know, exteriors of temples painted pink and turquoise. It was so easy to find a temple in a city back then. So I thought, well, pink is one of the Hare Krishna colors, one of the bliss colors. I'll make a design a pink button and with the words Hare Krishna in turquoise. But the turquoise, the button maker told me the turquoise doesn't come out so well on the pink, so he did it white, he made the letters white. So I had 200 of these buttons printed up. And I proudly brought them to the temple. And so, you know, the first devotee, he was a Mataji, you know, I proudly said, oh, I've got some Hare Krishna buttons. He was kind of, she tried to kind of control herself. I saw her first reaction was, what are you doing? I'm wasting money like this. So I felt a little bad because I noticed. Yeah. I suppose they were having in their mind that just 2 weeks ago, you know, before I started coming to the temple, they had met me on the street, and I had twice, and I had given like a total of $4,000, never even having been to the temple. So I guess naturally when I would come to the temple with a box of buttons, they're saying, well, I mean, we could do a bit better than that. Anyway, this next devotee that I encountered, you know, she was, you know, very, very, oh, how nice. This is just what we need. Honey, this is a funny. I know better. That's not a great thing. So, then, when I finally, a few months later, when I finally became a resident of the temple, then there was daily Harinam parties. I would go out on Harinam, and while the Harinam party was there, there would be prasad distribution, and of course, incense was big then. The spiritual sky was a big incense purveyor, the spiritual sky incense company run by devotees for the profit of ISKCON. So we would distribute incense and ask for donations. I remember one day, I had been in the temple for 3 weeks, and so on a Harinam party, I distributed $80 worth of incense. So I went back to the temple, and then the temple president, actually the first devotee to come to Australia, Wali Mardan, he called me in. I got something to tell you. You are a saint in your time, devotee. You go out every day of the week, and you distribute books. Every day of the week. So I thought, oh, this is very difficult. This is not what I had in mind, you know. I liked going out every day in Harinam. It was nice, you know. The problem I was seeking a New York temple, you know. He wanted something else. He wanted book distribution so much that, you know, that as he was shaking the temple, devotees were complying. Devotees wrote him. You have to understand the circumstances. This is all time, place, and circumstances. So devotees wrote him, Prabhupada, you know, we've been following your orders. We've been, we don't have the daily Harinam. We have the weekly Harinam, and we do book distribution every day. But we think that the people aren't seeing us as much as they did before because we don't have the daily Harinam party. We thought that would, we could reply to Prabhupada. I see. No, Prabhupada just wrote back. They can see you when they come to the temple on Sunday. Selling. The principle is he wanted what he wanted. So that's the point. Yeah. At that time, he wanted book distribution to get going. So therefore, he said, now I prefer this instead of that. And even though you might think there's a lack of this, there's something lacking because of the emphasis on this, still I want. That is bhakti. You find out the desire of the beloved. And you execute it. This is what the cowherd boys are doing. And they're teaching us. This is what we should be doing. We want a chance to execute Krishna's orders. That is the perfection of our life. Not that we just do our own thing. A devotee is always praying to Krishna. Is this the best thing I can do for you? Is this what you really want for me? And then you analyze your heart. I must have some material desires wrapped up in my executing this service. I must be trying to get attention or fame or somehow or other. The witch of material desire must be creeping in somewhere. So the devotee's alert to weed the garden. Just like you have any kind of garden, you have to be alert about the weeds, especially if you have an organic garden. You have to always be looking out for the weeds. So similarly, in our bhakti gardens, we're always mindful of the possible weeds that can grow. So here, the cowherd boys have acknowledged or they presented their credentials. We're executing the orders of Krishna. And then, just as Krishna said, they said, we've been sent here by Balaram, because Balaram is a born of Kshatriya stock from the material point of view, and Krishna had told them, you'll probably take it more seriously if you mention Balaram, because I'm just a Vaishya, son of a cowherd man. So they were sent here by Balaram, and then they said, we wish all good for you. Praptan Janita Padram Vo. Please recognize us. We've arrived here. Please acknowledge our arrival. We wish all good to you. Why were they saying, please acknowledge us? Please note that we've come. They say like that because the providence were just being silent. They were ignoring them. That's how puffed up these Brahmanas were. And that, throughout the continuing presentation to the Brahmanas are just going to be silent, just busy with their rituals, their sacrifices for going to the heavenly planets. They're not even going to say yes to the cowherd boys' request. They're not even going to say no. So that's why the cowherd boys are saying, please acknowledge our arrival. Can you imagine going to visit someone and you have to tell them, can you please acknowledge that I'm here? That was the situation. The cowherd boy, the Brahmanas thought, oh, who are these boys? We are doing important yajnas, important sacrifices for going to the heavenly planets, for pleasing the demigods. And who are these boys bothering us? About another cowherd boy named, two cowherd boys named Krishna and Balaram. Please do not disturb us with these trivial things. So, in spite of the puffed upness of the Brahmanas, the cowherd boys are saying, Bhadram, Bhadram Vo. We wish all good fortune. We wish all good to you. That is the nature of a devotee. Actually, a devotee has no enemies. But some people put themselves in the position of being enemies of devotees because their enemies are Krishna. But the devotee himself or herself has no enemies and wishes all good for everyone. That's why we say, Pranam Vijayate, Sri Krishna Sankirtan. Let the perfect good triumph everywhere for everyone. Sri Krishna Sankirtan. The spreading of Krishna's glories. Even though the cowherd boys are on the platform of spontaneous love of Krishna, and they're acting out of spontaneous attraction for Krishna, still you can learn from them. And they're showing that the world requires a proper social system with Brahmanas on top. The Brahmanas who have the knowledge how to guide society. You especially can see that today. People don't know, they really don't know what to do. Their so-called democracies have been overrun and overpowered by huge financial interests. And some people can see it, but they can't do anything about it. And people are powerless even if they can see it because they're so bought off by sense gratification. Like one former Prime Minister of New Zealand was telling me, there was a time when we leaders of nations were worried that people might revolt, but not anymore. All you do is give them unlimited TV channels and unlimited sports. They never bother you. So people are actually blind to what's happening in their societies, and they also don't have, even if they can see it, they can't change it because they don't have any potency. So they talk about democracy this, democracy that, but their so-called democratic nations are just run by huge financial interests. They don't have anyone in top positions who has the lifestyle and vision of a Brahmana. Detachment from matter so that you can give a clear advice, give a clear direction for the good of the people. Everyone's compromised. In fact, the more compromised you are by political and economic influences, the higher your post is. Whereas the Vedic system is reversed. The less compromised you are, the higher your post is. I explain at universities that, I'm speaking there, that the Vedic system means before you dare to have power over others, first have power over yourself. But who cares about that in today's society? The voters don't care. They don't ask their political leaders, do you have power over yourself? Can you control your mind and senses? In some countries, if a politician has a you know, extramarital affair or something. The opposition party uses it to get him out of power. In other countries, some people say, good on you. You're a lucky guy. In any case, no one is exalting the principle of power over the self before you dare to have power over others. What to speak of freedom from financial entanglements that could cloud your decision-making. That's all that's going on these days. Everyone in high positions is compromised by financial obligations and duties. Therefore, they are not looking out for the benefit of the people. And the people may even know that the leaders are so compromised. Just like in the USA, for example, people are dying from what's called E. coli bacteria in the meat. Yet the food industry is so powerful when it's time to for the government to appoint a chief inspector for the Food and Drug Administration. Somewhere else, the meat industry always supplies the candidate. He's the one. He's very qualified. And then none of the regulations are enforced strictly because the food industry, with their billions of dollars, has control of the government. Because basically, for example, in the USA, there are just four meat companies to control all the meat business. So they spend billions of dollars to influence government leaders. Pennies for them. So in this way, no doubt you can imagine in Australia, so much money comes from the various mineral ores. So obviously, that industry has a huge effect on the government. That's just the way it is. And people are willing to accept that. Yeah, as long as I get my cut. Just give me 20 extra dollars per week and the leaders can do whatever they want. That's the way it is these days. What was that? Like last year, every tax-paying Australian got a $500, something like that? Wow, $500! What a great leader! Let him do what he likes! He could have all the entangling political and financial dealings. Doesn't matter. I got $500 this year. What can you buy with $500? Can you buy a widescreen TV with that? No. You can get something, right? A couple of iPods or something. Yeah, practical. It's a practical leader. But season tickets to get a season ticket to the rugby matches or something? 500? Yeah. That's how people are today. Without real brahmanas, what is going to be the use? You can't have a society that's making a clear progress because no one has clear vision. The Cowherd Boys are demonstrating both transcendental truths and material truths in their approach to the brahmanas. Hey, Bhumi Deva Srinuta. Oh, earthly gods, please listen to us. So you're first-class brahmanas on the material platform, but you should listen to us because we're going to teach you how to be transcendental brahmanas. We're going to engage you in giving food to Krishna and Balaram. So the Cowherd Boys are actually the superiors in this situation. They are the instructors. They're giving transcendental.